As we continue, tonight is May, what is it, the 13th, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mother's Day. Okay, May 13th, and it is, we are continuing our Parshas Vayera, right in the beginning, on page 78. Thank you very much. And we left off last week that Avraham had gotten his bris, and he had given a bris to all of the male members of his home, which included Yishmael and all of the slaves. And here we have one of the most famous prophecies, one of the most famous prophetic stories in the Chumash, and that is where Avraham has three guests who come, and we know that they are angels, that they are in disguise, and that they are angels. Now, this is a prophecy. It's sometimes that is lost on people to know that this is in fact a prophecy, because you have these angels, and they appear like humans, and they're really malachim. When an angel appears to somebody and speaks to them, that is some form of nevuah, of prophecy. Because what is nevuah? Nevuah means a connection to Hashem of some sort. So an angel, a malach, is a shliach, is a messenger of Hashem, and he's simply a go-between from Hashem to the person. And so, for example, like last week we spoke about how Hagar, or 2 weeks ago we spoke how Hagar met four different angels at the well. Well, those angels were forms of prophecy, where she was being given instructions from Hashem through angels. Here, Avraham is going to have a kind of a funny type of prophecy, because he has a give and take with the angels. It's not just, here's an angel who appears and says, this is what Hashem said, X, Y, and Z. Instead, it's going to be a conversation, offering food, etc. But nevertheless, this is all part of a nevuah that is going on with Avram. Now, the parasha begins with Avram outside his tent in the heat of the day. Most of us are familiar with what Chazal tell us, what our sages say, that Avraham was sick because he had the circumcision, the bris milah. It was the third day after the bris milah, which is when the recuperation would be the most painful time. And Avraham, being the epitome of chesed, of loving kindness, was always looking for guests. And Hashem decided to give Avraham a break and to not have guests. But Avraham wanted guests anyway. So how did Hashem keep the guests away? He made it very, very hot, so that way there would be nobody traveling on the roads, and Avraham would be spared the difficulty of having guests. But Avraham wanted guests very badly, so Hashem brought them anyway. Let's read the psukim inside, and then discuss some of the depth behind the psukim. Hashem appears to him in Elone Mamre, the plains of Mamre, and he was sitting at the doorway of his tent in the heat of the day. He was sitting in the doorway of the tent because he was looking for travelers. And it was in the heat of the day, meaning that Hashem made it very hot to keep the travelers away. Now Hashem appeared to him. We don't know what that means, that Hashem appeared to him. What does it mean? Did Hashem show him a vision? Is he talking to him? There's something going on between Hashem and Avraham. Vayari lifts up his eyes and he sees. There are three men standing on him, which means that they're in the distance standing, not sure whether to approach him or not. Vayari saw. He just said that he saw, but Rashi explains that he understood. Not only he just didn't just see them, but he understood that they were hesitant to approach him because they saw that he was really not well. He ran to greet them from the doorway of the tent. And he bowed to the ground. And he said, now this next word is either Hashem, because either he's talking to Hashem, or it is my master. and he's referring to the leader of the three. So it can be read either way. We when we translate, we generally say Hashem because we're not sure which one this is. If I have found favor in your eyes, do not pass from before your servant. So there, depending on how you read the word Hashem, whether as Aleph Dalet, whether it's Hashem or my master, if it is my master, which means he's referring to the lead angel, in this case the lead person, he hasn't other angels yet, then what he's saying is pretty clear. He's saying, don't leave, stay, be my guest, don't go away. If he's talking to Hashem, then what he's saying is, Hashem, I know we're in the middle of a conversation, because Hashem appeared to Avram, and Avram said to Hashem, hold on a minute, don't leave, let me go greet these guests. So with that second explanation, you have the famous Chazal, they say that we see from here that greeting guests is greater than greeting the Shechina itself and talking to Hashem. Because Abraham is in the middle of a conversation with Hashem, and he sees these three passersby, and he wants to invite them in, and he says, Hashem, hold on a sec. And he runs and greets the guests. Can you imagine talking with God on the phone, and you put him on hold? Right? And that's what he did. And he said, wait a second, and he goes and runs after the guests. So from here, Chazal tell us that it is more important to greet guests, to bring in, hachnasas arachim, to bring in guests, than it is to speak to God Himself. And then he goes on to say to the guests, to these three travelers, that what he'll do, he wants to take bread and give them to eat, and they agree, and then it goes through the whole process of what Abraham did, how he ran to the tent and told Sarah to prepare for the guests. And of course, Sarah goes and prepares for the guests, and he runs to the cattle to slaughter an animal for the guests, etc. And then then he serves them and waits on them as they're eating. Yeah.
Is there anything significant to the fact that Esther had said that when she was about to approach Ahasuerus? I don't know what's the thing. Would it be significant?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing.
Because it says that could have been that she was talking to Hashem. You know, that I should find, you know, uh-huh, in your eyes, so that I should be matzliach when I go to Pink Achashverosh.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay, but think about that one. Imatzasichein beinecha. Well, she says imatzasichein beinei hamelach. Right.
But we know that hamelach two times. Right. And then
we know hamelach in the Megillah always means Hashem. Yeah. Very good. Okay, that's very nice. Very good.
I was wondering if it's anything.
Yeah, I had not thought of it. Very nice. So we'll have to see if we can put that together.
Do you think God, that this was set up this way for us to get the lessons of it? Because God could have just talked to
them. Absolutely. I was going to say, why did he have to send the malach and make this whole big thing? Mm-hmm. Why couldn't he have just come and said,
this is all for us?
Okay.
Or to show us how to do halachas.
Well, it's beyond that. Yes, it's all for us to show us how to do halachas, but that's what we're getting to. We're going to show that it's even beyond that. There's something deeper going on over here. It had to be this way, as we will see, and that's what we're going to show. Now he doesn't know that they are angels. He thinks that they're just these wandering Bedouins, and he's running to greet them, running to bring them in. Now, it should be noted, this is a side point, but it should be noted that when Chazal say that it is more important to bring in guests than it is to speak to Hashem, they're talking about this type of bringing in of guests. They're not talking about, and I'm not trying to belittle this, but they're not talking about when we in the community invite over each other to our houses, which is a beautiful thing. It's a very good thing to do, and I'm not belittling that at all. But we should not confuse that with what the Torah is talking about over here of Hachnas Asarchim. The true Hachnas Asarchim means taking someone who doesn't have food, doesn't have a place to stay, etc. That you're giving them something they don't have. It's wonderful that we get together, and we should get together, because it promotes shalom and it promotes the general community, which is a beautiful, beautiful thing. But there's two levels. We should really say it that way. There's Hachnas Asarchim that we do on a regular basis. Then there's the Hachnas Asarchim where someone really has nothing. Even if they have something had they been at home. But currently they have nothing because they are traveling and they don't have a place to stay. They don't have anything with them. Then that would be the Hachnas Asarchim that's being discussed over here. In the Halacha, like for instance with the laws of Shabbos, there are certain rabbinic decrees that are suspended for hachnasas arkim, but it's referring to this type of hachnasas arkim, not what we do on a typical type of hachnasas arkim. So just should be noted that there is a difference between the two things. But at any rate, he doesn't know that they are angels, and he runs to greet them. And now, and he invites them in. Now, Abraham and Sarah are our examples of chesed. They stand for chesed. That is the pillar upon which Abraham stands, and that's the pillar that, that he develops. We know that Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the three of us, the three patriarchs, they are the, figuratively, they are the three legs upon which the world stands. Everything stands upon, we stand upon them, and therefore the whole world stands upon them, the three legs of a, like of a stool. And they each represent a different leg. Each leg represents a different midah, a different character trait. Avraham represents chesed, Yitzchak represents gevura, which we'll talk about, and Yaakov represents?
Emes.
Okay. So we'll discuss those things as we get to them. If you want to say it a little differently, Avraham is chesed, Yitzchak is avoda, which means service or tefillah, and Yaakov is Torah. Okay, so as we get to Yitzchak and Yaakov, we'll discuss what they stand for. Hopefully we'll remember to do that. But Avraham, we know, stands for chesed. The pasuk tells us in... Where is that pasuk? It's one of the Haftaras. Is it in Sefania? Ma Hashem Doresh Mimach. How's it go? It says Ahavas Chesed. I don't remember which where that is. I'll remember. I'll find it actually as we hopefully before the end of tonight. I'll find where it is. But at any rate, it says in the pasuk that we should have Ahavas Chesed, love of Chesed. I once heard a talk about Ahavas Chesed, about loving kindness. Not loving kindness, which means to do loving kindness, but to love doing kindness. You know, it's supposed to love doing kindness. It's supposed to be something that you love doing. One is supposed to develop in themselves the love of doing chesed for others. And I once heard Rabbi Yisachar Frand talking about this, and he brought up this story. And he pointed out, I believe from Moshe Feinstein, that you know, we are commanded to do mitzvahs. There are mitzvahs that we're commanded to do. Now, mitzvahs are often dependent on certain factors. For example, if you want to give tzedakah, it's a beautiful thing to give tzedakah. If there's no poor person or needy institution to give the money to, I realize that it's hard to believe, but if there would be such a thing, you wouldn't be able to do tzedakah. You can't give tzedakah to someone who has money. That's not a mitzvah tzedakah. Giving tzedakah is giving to someone who needs money. And so, in order to do tzedakah, you need to have a recipient. If there is no recipient, you can't do tzedakah. Now, are you commanded to give tzedakah when there's no recipient? Think about that. Is there a commandment in the Torah that you should give tzedakah when there's no recipient? And the answer is no. You're not commanded to give tzedakah if there's no recipient. If there's someone who needs it, then we are all commanded to do what we can to help. But if there's no one who needs it, then we're not commanded to help because there's nobody to help. Chesed really ought to be the same thing. We are commanded to do chesed. We have to do chesed. We have to do kindness. But if nobody needs kindness, if everybody is self-sufficient and nobody needs anything, then there should be no command to do chesed. Or, let's use an example which is more akin to what happened with Abraham. If you are alone on a desert island, so you're by yourself. So could there be a commandment of chesed? There is no commandment of chesed. There's nobody to get to be the recipient of your good graces. So what is the chesed? Avraham was what we call putter. He had no commandment to do chesed. Yet Avraham is literally having a withdrawal from chesed. He can't stand not doing chesed. Hashem took out the sun, meaning made it really, really hot, to keep people away, so Avram wouldn't be able to do chesed, so he would be able to recuperate. And Avram is in greater pain from not doing the chesed than he is from his operation. And so Hashem sees that, hey, it's counterproductive. I was trying to help him, but he's literally in pain because he can't do chesed. He's sitting here at the door pining for guests. So Hashem brings the angels. That's the love of chesed that Avram is, that he stands for. And of course, that's one of the lessons that we have to take from here. But you'll see, I want to connect this to a broader theme that's going on over here. So Avraham takes care of the guests. He goes through all kinds of preparation. If you go through the psukim carefully, then you see all the different types of foods that he brought them. Chazal tell us he actually slaughtered three different animals so that he could serve each one of the guests' tongue.
No question.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious that one person's not going to eat a whole tongue, and I understand it's like shows how much he loved the mitzvah. But come on, I mean.
Well, I don't know. I mean, how much?
A whole tongue per person.
Well, if it's a
it depends.
The
animal.
Yeah, the animal too. Well, the main thing was the tongue, right?
No, but it depends how big the animal was. It says he took a ben bakar, so I don't know that's a young calf. I mean, I don't know a young calf.
To me, it sounds like pretty excessive.
Yes. Yeah, a calf is
a calf is still a lot of food. Yeah. But it's mainly for the tongue, right?
The tongue.
So we're not talking about the meat from
right.
the animal.
Right. He wanted to serve a separate.
I thought he had a lot of people there. I guess they
had three people.
There's only three people.
Nobody's giving a servant.
No, he's giving a whole tongue to one person. That's way enormous amount of food. No?
Even for a calf.
I mean, I don't eat tongue, but I know what it looks like.
Hey, really, angels don't eat. Come on.
No, but he doesn't know that they're angels.
Right.
He has his pain from the bridge.
Are they very big?
Even
they're
small, what do you think? It's a little thing.
No,
we don't know.
Yeah, we don't
know. Of
a camp. Of a camp. We're saying maybe for everything. Maybe that's what I think, too.
But there were other people. I guess they got the leftovers.
Well, that's...
What's Rashi say?
No, Rashi says that you serve them eating.
Come on, he's not,
It didn't bother Rashi, it shouldn't bother.
I guess.
We have to understand why it didn't bother Rashi.
Right. Okay, whenever I learned, I was thinking, like, come on, he mustn't realize there's a ton of food here,
No, there was a ton of food, but there weren't a ton of tongues.
Who shares one whole tongue to one person?
Why would he die?
It was like the
He was treating them like royalty.
He was treating them like royalty.
He didn't serve them anything else, just the tongue. The rest of the leftovers
for them to take on the way back
with them. I guess it's a way to show.
He took cream and milk and half the calf. So he didn't have those laws yet.
No, he did.
No, that's a good question. They asked the question, how could he soak the cream and milk?
It was the calf which he prepared.
He said he took cream and milk and the
calf that he prepared.
In what order does he serve it? First the cream,
the milk,
and then the calf.
And then the calf. Right.
So that's okay. And that order is fine.
So that was like the appetizer.
But that's not saying just the tongue.
Cooking.
Yeah.
But that's not
just
saying the tongue. That's saying because the actual calf.
Well, Rashi says when he served them actually was the tongue. Yeah. You should know, by the way, and this is a side point, but you should know that a lot of people have the custom to serve dairy on Shavuos.
Right.
And there are various reasons given for that. But one of the reasons given for it, which is in Shulchan Aruch, which most people aren't aware of, is that on Shavuos there was a sacrifice that was brought, a special sacrifice just for Shavuos, a karban, called the Shtei Halacha, which means the two loaves of bread. Which means they offered two sheep with two loaves of bread, which was not brought any other time of year. And in order to commemorate the two loaves of bread, says the Rama in Shulchan Aruch, then you should serve one meal which is split into two. Meaning you should serve two meals in one. How do you serve two meals in one? What you do is you start with dairy and you eat some dairy first with some bread. Then you take that bread off the table because it was eaten with dairy, change the tablecloth, and put out new bread with meat at the same meal. Mm-hmm. Don't bench. And then when you finish everything, then bench.
And
that's the according to the Ramah, that's the custom to have dairy on Shavuos, to have a double meal.
People do that. That is really the reason why some people do the dairy and then have
That's the meaning on Shavuos, according to Ramah.
Because of this reason that you're saying?
Yeah, that's what Ramah said.
Couldn't you have it on a different table? No.
Yeah, you could do that too. You could do that too. Now, I'm saying, personally, we don't do that. We don't do that. That's a lot of work. We don't do that. We do serve dairy meals, but not in that way. But I'm just saying, but this idea of serving first the dairy and then having the meat, that actually is an accepted custom, accepted minhag on Shavuos in many places. At any rate, that seems what Avraham did over here. And he's serving. Now, he's also waiting upon them. If you look at verse 8, Ches, at the bottom of 78, Vayikach chema v'chalav, he took cream and milk, uven ha-bakar asher ha-sa, and the young calf that he made, Vayitein lifnehem, and he placed it before them, v'hu omeid aleihem, and he stood upon them, tachas ha-etz, under the tree, vayochelu, and they ate. How could they eat? They were angels, so Rashi explains that they made it to look as if they ate. Okay. So he's actually, he's in pain and he's waiting upon them. Now, so far, all that's happened is that Hashem gave Avraham the opportunity to do Hachnasas Orchim because he really, really wanted to. Now comes, it seems, the purpose of the whole thing. And this is what you've been asking before. Why not just tell him all these things? The angels now tip their hand. They now Avraham actually finds out what they're about and why they're here. He just thought that they were traveling. They ask him, where is Sarah? He says, Sarah is in the tent, because since they were all men, so it would be inappropriate for a woman to be there with them, so she's in the tent.
He wasn't surprised they knew her name?
And
now, okay, they could be already, he's getting an inkling of what's going on, right? He's going to find out very shortly that they're angels. But at any rate, so she's in the tent. And then the angel says, in Pasuk Yod, verse 10 on page 80, Vayomer Shov Ashuve Lecha Ka'is Chayavi Neven Lesara Ishtecha. I will return to you, like the living, how does it translate this? Like a living time? I will show at this time next year, right? And there will be a son for Sarah, your wife. So, in other words, a prophecy. He tells them, your wife Sarah is going to have a baby. She's 89 years old. You're 99 years old. This time next year, she will be 90. You'll be 100. She will have a baby. And Sarah was listening from the door of the tent, and then the pasuk tells us that they were very old, and Sarah laughed inside. And she said, how could it be? How could I possibly have a child? So they tell him that she's going to have a child. So it seems that that is the purpose of their visit. Mm-hmm. Their purpose is to tell Abraham that Sarah is going to have a child. Now, there were three angels. The rule of thumb is that every angel has one job. No angel has two jobs at one time. Only one job. And so, Chazal tell us that each of these three angels had a different job. Because after this, the next major story, and we will see the connection probably next week, but the next major story is going to be the destruction of Sodom. And these angels are going to leave Abraham and go to Sodom to destroy it. So Chazal tells us, our sages tell us, and Rashi cites it, that one angel was to inform them of the impending birth of Yitzchak. That's one. A second angel was to destroy Sodom. A third angel was to heal Abraham and to save Lot from Sodom. Because that's really the same thing. Healing and saving are the same type of job. That's not considered two jobs. Just two different people that he's saving. So healing Avraham from his surgery, and then saving Lot. So that's the three angels.
Do we have the names of the angels?
We know that they are of the famous angels, Michael, Gabriel, Raphael. Raphael is the obvious one. Raphael means to heal, so that's the one who healed Abraham. Michael and Gabriel, I saw different versions of which one each, what each one did. One of them informed them about Yitzchak, the other one destroyed Saddam. I would imagine it was Gabriel who destroyed Saddam and Michael. Yeah. Okay. But at any rate, that's what's going on over here. So let's ask the question again. Why couldn't Hashem just have told Abraham that Sarah's going to have a baby? In fact, Hashem did tell Abraham that Sarah's going to have a baby at the end of Parshas Lech Lecha. He said to him that you'll have this bris milah, and you'll change Sarah's name from Sarai to Sarah, and she will have a baby. And they'll hear the angels come, and she's going to have a baby. Well, we know that already. Well, you have to have another prophecy that she's going to have a baby? And what, the angel is better than God himself? In last week's parasha, which we discussed last week in Parshas Lech Lecha, the last parasha, let's read the pasuk. How does it say it over here? It's on page 74 at the bottom. It's actually in two places. First, in pasuk Tes Zayin 16, Uveirachti Osai will bless. This is Hashem talking. I will bless her, v'gam nasati mena lecha bein, and I will give from her to you a son. So clearly, and then again at the bottom of the page, Yud Tes 19, Vayomer Elokim Avol Sarah Yishtecha Yoledes Lecha Bein. Sarah, in truth, your wife will give birth for you a son. V'karasa es Shmo Yitzchak, and you will call his name Yitzchak. So this is all God has told Abraham this already, and now in Parashas Vayera we have angels, which is not as direct as Hashem himself, telling Abraham that Sarah is going to have a baby. And Sarah hears it also. Now, the first time Sarah didn't hear it. This time Sarah does hear it.
So she didn't hear it the first time.
He was talking to Abraham only.
So, is it possible she didn't know?
It is possible that she didn't know. It is possible. It is possible. I don't know if Abraham was told to tell her or not. We're going to, when we learn especially about the whole episode with Yaakov and Esav and the blessings from Yitzchak, and the whole thing with Yitzchak and Rivka, we will talk then about prophecy and how prophecy works and how very specific it is to the person to whom it was told. We'll talk about that. But so I don't know whether Sarah knew or not. But at any rate, over here, she does hear about it, meaning the prophecy, which was through the angels, came to her because she heard it. But still, it seems so
superfluous.
That's right. Who needs it? I mean, Hashem told Abraham about it. So, if you recall last week, we talked about how Yitzchak should never have been born. According to the stars, Yitzchak should never have been born. And Yitzchak was born through changing the names of Abraham and Sarah, from Abraham to Abraham and Sarai to Sarah, and through the bris, which also was symbolic of being beyond the natural, to be supernatural. We Jews, by all rights, should not exist. And as we mentioned last week, this recurs in history over and over again, that we really don't belong here. And it is only through miraculous intervention that we are here. And, moreover, the people who take a good look at it, non-Jews who take a good look at it, like Mark Twain, can't understand it. It's that famous, right? They can't understand it. How do we still exist? And it is baffling. And the answer is we shouldn't. It is miraculous. Because our whole existence is supernatural. Because that's our job. Our job is to take the natural, take the world, and bring it to spirituality, bring it to Hashem. Connect the world to Hashem. And so our whole existence is only based on that. Abraham is chesed. That's what he stands for. Now, the three pillars, the three character traits that the Avos perfected, Avraham chesed, Yitzchak gevura, Yaakov emes, they are needed. You need all three. Every one is necessary. And in order to forge the Jewish people, we needed to have three patriarchs who would perfect these traits and embed it within their children, which is us. We descend from them, and since we descend from them, we have it in our makeup, in our DNA. We have these traits that they perfected. But the first one is chesed. And it has to be that way. You can't start with anything else. You must start with chesed, and from chesed you move on to the other ones. But chesed is the building block. It's not the end. If you have pure chesed and nothing else, pure chesed self-destructs. Pure chesed, a person can be overly kind, and then you get bleeding heart, etc. Then it becomes misplaced. So pure chesed, without tempering it in any way, is bad, is dangerous. But you've got to start with chesed. And we know that when you raise children, when you have students, you don't start with an intellectual discussion. You don't start. What is the first thing that as a child develops, as we all developed? What's the first thing that you work on? You work on a child's ability to see beyond themselves. That's the way you start. You start with chesed, and then you move on to other things. This is not we're not ready to talk about Megillas Rus and Shavuos, but the truth is that Malchus, the royalty of Klal Yisrael, is all based on Chesed, which is what Megillas Rus is all about. Megillas Rus is all about Chesed. That's what it is. From beginning to end, that's what it's all about. It's a separate discussion when we have Shavuos talks. So it has to start with Chesed. And that's what Avraham stands for. Hashem is actually testing Avraham. See, Avraham has a bris. What's the whole point of this bris, as we mentioned last week? It's to bring out the fact that if you're going to have a child, you, Avraham, are going to have a child, understand something, that this child, who Avraham wants desperately, not because he wants a child just for the sake of having a child, it's because he wants to be able to have a legacy to leave, which is the serving of Hashem. That's what he wants. He wants to forge the Jewish people. That's why he feels he exists. And Hashem says to him, I'm going to give him to you, because you deserve it. But you have to understand, and they have to understand, his descendants have to understand, that it's all because of bringing the world to Hashem. That's why we exist. And if we do our job, we deserve to exist. And God forbid, if we don't do our job, then God forbid the opposite. That's why we're here. And that's what the Bris Milah is all about. Is the Bris Milah, which is all about the fact that we exist to bring people close to Hashem, when Avraham gets his Bris Milah, is that going to get in the way of what Avraham stands for? Think about it. If Avraham would have said, I'm not feeling well. I just had surgery. I'm not interested in chesed right now. Chesed is a great thing. But right now, I got to think about me. Because I'm in pain. And when I'm in pain, I don't want to think about other people. I want to think about me. That's missing the boat. That's missing the whole point. What was the whole point of the bris? The whole point of the bris was that you don't exist for you. You exist, Hashem says, for me. That's why you Jews exist. And that's what your whole purpose in life is. So if the bris is going to get in the way of what Avraham stands for, which is chesed, then the whole thing is lost. So Hashem does, he brings Avraham to, I think this is one of the, I mean, all the nisyonos, all the tests of Avraham are incredible. I mean, just what he was able to do are incredible. The lesson that we can learn from each one and how he was able to overcome the most incredible obstacles. But this one, when you think about it, Hashem takes him and puts him in a situation where any normal person would say, rightfully so, I need a break. And Hashem is testing him. Are you going to say you need a break? Or are you going to say, my existence is for others? That's why I'm here. And Avraham is in greater pain not having the guests than he is because of the surgery. That is passing the test. And so Hashem brings him the guests. And he says, let's see what you do with the guests.
But she didn't want to send guests in the beginning.
Right, because that was the test. That was the test.
He created it himself.
Right. Hashem set him up. Hashem said, I'm giving you the opportunity. I'll bring the sun out. There won't be any guests. You can rightfully say, oh, Thank God there are no guests today.
He passed it by that Hashem allowed the guests to come.
That's right. By the fact that he couldn't stand not having guests, that was passing the test. And Hashem brought the guests, and then he follows through. He runs to greet them. I mean, imagine, he's in terrible pain. He runs to greet them. He runs to go get the food ready. He runs to Sarah. He runs to the cow. He slaughters the cow. He gets it ready. He waits upon them while they're eating. He's totally involved in the chesed. Completely oblivious to his own physical pain. It is through that chesed that the announcement comes, now Sarah will have a baby. It had to be this way.
That's the outcome of the fact
that's
that he
the result.
The test.
That's right.
In other words, if he had not passed the test,
I don't know what would have happened because he was already told from the birth that she's going to have a baby. But this is how it has to happen. It's not that the angels are a greater prophecy than Hashem himself, God forbid. Of course, in last week's in Parshas Lech Lecha, Hashem's direct statement to Avraham is a stronger prophecy. But the way it actually happens is like this, to bring out the fact that Yitzchak's birth is predicated on Avraham's incredible chesed, to the exclusion of his own needs and his own pain. That's why Yitzchak is born, because of this. And so it is yet another indication of our existence, our whole existence, is based on serving Hashem, putting what is for Hashem before what is for us, to think of what Hashem wants of us. And that's what Avraham does. And that's what happens over here. And therefore, it is the angel that says, next year at this time, you will have a baby. Now, it could be that it would have happened anyway, because Hashem did give him the prophecy, but maybe it would have happened later. Maybe it would have happened differently. Who knows? We will find time and again, as we go through Tanakh, that, and we talked about this in the very, very beginning, there is Hashem's plan, and Hashem's plan will always happen. This is the old question of Hashem knows everything, but there's free will. Hashem has a plan, but there's free will. Hashem's plan will always take place. You can't sabotage God's plan. It will happen. But there are millions, billions of ways that His plan can happen. The question always is it going to happen in this way or that way? And there may be a first way, a second way, a third way, and everybody has the chance to buy into it or to buy out of it. And so, what would have happened if he would have failed over here? So, then perhaps there would have been but it would have been a different circumstance, and it wouldn't have been as good. It would have been perhaps not the way that we have it here, whatever it would have been. But the way it does happen is through this act of chesed. And that's where we see Yitzchak's birth based on it. And because of it, now they're going to have a baby. Now, the next step to this is, but I'm saving this for next week. We have a few more things to tie up over here. But the next step to this is that then how does this then segue into the destruction of Sodom? Because that's the next step in the process. And so we're moving on. This is the way it happens. But part and parcel of the whole thing is you have the two angels who are going to go on to Sodom and destroy Sodom and save Lot, etc. So there's going to be more going on. And so we'll see how that all ties in. But at least we see so far that it is the chesed of Avraham that brings about Yitzchak.
It really gives meaning to when it says chesed alam yivaneh. The chesed has to come first.
Right, that's right.
Hashem is teaching us. He's everything in Torah is for a reason. Teaching us a chesed to emulate Hashem's name.
That's right.
And that's because chesed is selflessness.
That's right.
Like we're saying, like Avraham did it for Hashem.
That's right.
That's
right.
The basis.
Very good. Excellent. You're adding a point.
The Jewish people, right?
Right.
We are selfless people.
Right. Right.
Like he was selfless.
You are selfless when you devote yourself to Hashem also. Right. Because you're putting Hashem before yourself. Right. We think of selflessness only between each other, which is the true selflessness, but you're also selfless when you say, I'm going to put Hashem before myself.
That's what Abraham did, so he set the precedent for us.
The Gemara tells us that the Torah is tchilaso gmilas chasadim, v'sofo gmilas chasadim. The Torah starts with chesed and ends with chesed. The Torah, any masterpiece, will start and end with the what the whole thing is about. The Torah begins with chesed and ends with chesed. It begins with Hashem clothing those who had no clothes, Adam and Chava, and it ends with Hashem burying he who had no one to bury him, which was Moshe. And so it starts with chesed and ends with chesed. That's what the Torah is all about. There's, of course, a lot in there, but the basis is chesed. And Abraham is chesed because he's starting the nation off, and he's got to start with chesed. And so this is Yitzchak's birth can only come about through an unbelievable act of chesed, over-the-top act of chesed, one that is almost impossible to believe happened. That's how it has to happen. Now, there are some, we'll call them minor themes going on over here, minor lessons that we should just point out before we walk away from this. And for those who walked in a little bit late, I did say I have to end this class a little early, which is in 5 minutes at 20 after, and I'm going to have to run out the door because I have to get in time for Mincha. I wasn't able to have Mincha earlier today. But the you have here in Pasuk Tes, verse 9, on the top of page 80. Vayomu Elav Ayei Sarah Ishtacha. They said to him, where is Sarah, your wife? Vayomu Yineva Oel. And he said, behold, in the tent. From here, Chazal tell us that it is important that guests should ask the husband about the wife, and they should ask the wife about the husband. Meaning that guests should try to promote shalom bayis, to promote peace in the home. And that if they can, they should try to show their host how wonderful the hostess, his wife, is. And they should try to show the hostess how wonderful her husband, the host, is, if possible. And that's what the angels did over here. The angels knew where Sarah was, but they asked him, where is Sarah? Because they wanted him to have the opportunity to brag, so to speak, and say, she's in the tent. Because the reason why Sarah was in the tent was because of tzniut, because of modesty. Because she understood, when it's all men out there, she doesn't belong out there. And therefore she was modest, she was in the tent. The angels, Abraham, of course, was very proud of that, that Sarah should be a modest woman. The angels took the opportunity to point it out to him, but they didn't say to him, they did it in a clever way. They didn't say to him, you know, she's really modest. That's not what they said. They said, where's your wife? And he said, oh, she's in the tent. And they gave him a chance to kvel, to have nachas. That's what they did. And that's something also to learn from when it comes to being a guest in someone's home. The art of being a good guest, of making sure that our stay in someone else's home promotes the home, promotes the bias.
I would think maybe nowadays it's not so serious for a man to come in and say, you know, how's your wife doing?
Well, it depends. I mean, obviously it depends, depends how it's done. Depends how it's done. There's nothing wrong with asking a spouse how their spouse is. There's, you know, that's acceptable. You're not supposed to, well, we're not going to, there's a whole discussion about one gender asking another gender how they're doing, etc.
Yeah, that sounds a little...
Yeah, no, but this is, they're asking where she is, not asking... You can also ask how she's doing.
I don't know, it sounds a little...
Why? It matters to one spouse.
A male guest who a stranger is saying...
Okay, you were just pointing out that it...
Let's say like nowadays, yeah. Right? Like okay. In certain circles it's not really done.
Okay, so you have to know you're right. You have to know your customers. There's no question about it. You have to know your customers. That's true.
So there goes the whole...
No.
I'm not...
because who asked before, they knew her name, right? So, right.
Yeah.
Right?
So, didn't say Mrs. Abraham.
Right.
We didn't have last names then.
Now, the truth is, Sarah was a famous woman. Abraham and Sarah were famous.
They were both famous.
Yeah, they were famous. Yeah, they were famous. True. So it could be that has to do with it as well. In addition, you have in the way that Abraham prepared the food, also Rashi points out several things, that the fact that he, it says in Pasuk Zion, 7. Ve'al-bakar ratz Avraham, and Avraham ran to the cattle. Vayikach ben bakar rachva tov, and he took a young calf, which was soft and good. Vayitain el-hanar, and he gave him to the lad. Vayimahel asososo, and he was quick to prepare it. Who is it? The lad. Right, that's Yishmael with the hey hayadia, the lad, the definite article. The lad. Not a lad, but the lad. I know I got it wrong. The lad. Dina's my conscience. The lad, because he had to train Yishmael in how to greet guests. So here Yishmael is being trained by Avraham in doing so. So that's the other point we learn from here.
Avraham wasn't being trained, but Yishmael also wasn't.
That is very good. I never thought of that. Very good. Excellent.
What did you say?
Yeah. Yishmael was in pain as well.
He also was in pain. So
yep.
he would do something.
Right. But it's not the time to be training him.
Well, no. It could be this was the point. He was training him that despite the pain.
To be selfless.
I don't know. But at any rate, that we see from here as well. Again, I am sorry I have to run out.